Good afternoon. This is Ozarks at Large for Tuesday, December 15th, 2020, and this is 91.3 KUAF, a listener-supported service of the J. William Fulbright College of Arts and Sciences at the University of Arkansas. Ahead this hour, efforts toward more affordable housing in Fayetteville. Ozarks at Large's Antoinette Grajeda brings us that story. And we'll meet one of the newest graduates of the University of Arkansas, Fort Smith. Rafa Yassin wants to make the world better, help dismiss stereotypes about Islam, and become a news anchor. Her story ahead. After our show on Here and Now from NPR and WBUR, the minimum wage is set to increase in many states January 1st. But some small business owners are calling on state legislatures to wait until the pandemic is over. That story and the latest news on COVID-19 vaccinations around the country on Here and Now, beginning at 1 this afternoon. Arkansas's Department of Health is reporting an additional 45 deaths from COVID-19. That brings the known number of confirmed and probable deaths in the state to just fewer than 3,000. The report also includes almost 1,400 new cases, 1,233 new confirmed cases, and 122 new probable cases. Hospitalizations from the virus dropped slightly by 7. Active cases dropped by more than 700. There are now 1,050 patients in Arkansas hospital beds with the disease and 20,691 active cases. Washington and Benton counties reported the second and third most cases in the most recent testing cycle, 102 and 95 new cases, respectively. The first COVID-19 vaccines are in Arkansas. The first shipment arrived yesterday morning, and already healthcare workers in the state are receiving vaccinations. Arkansas priorities for the Pfizer vaccine are for those working on the front lines of healthcare, as well as those working in and living in long-term care facilities. A new report places Northwest Arkansas among the 30 most economically dynamic metropolitan areas in the country. The region ranked third most among dynamic mid-sized metro areas, places with populations between 500,000 and 1 million people. The report was published this morning by Heartland Forward, a firm based in Bentonville focusing on economic performance in the middle of the country. Ross Duvall, president and CEO of Heartland Forward, says Northwest Arkansas's economic opportunities can improve with cooperation between business and education.
If Northwest Arkansas, working with the University of Arkansas Fayetteville, can become even more closely interconnected to the firms here and provide further support for faculty and students that want to start their companies, it can only enhance the economic performance of the region.
The full report can be viewed at heartlandforward.org. We'll hear much more from Ross Duvall on tomorrow's Ozarks at Large. All of us at Ozarks at Large and all of us at 91.3 KUAF are thankful to all of our listeners for joining us for radio, and thank you for making contributions during 2020 to keep this nonprofit public radio station strong. Thanks to you, we reached our goal of $50,000 raised during last week's end-of-year fundraiser. Thank you very much. National Weather Service offers a 30% chance of snow tonight in northwest Arkansas, with the best chance coming before 9. In the Arkansas River Valley, a 30% chance of rain early this evening, possibly a mix of rain and snow later. Lows throughout the region tonight between 24 and 28. Tomorrow, sunny with highs from 36 to 40. Highs this weekend are expected to be in the upper 40s to the mid-50s. This is Ozarks at Large. The first four homes in a new mixed-income neighborhood in South Fayetteville are under construction. Developers hope the project will help address a lack of affordable housing in the region. Ozarks at Large's Antoinette Grajeda has more.
The Willow Bend neighborhood is a project of Partners for Better Housing, a nonprofit housing developer with a mission to build vibrant mixed-income neighborhoods. Board Chairman Keaton Smith says they purchased 7 acres in the Walker Park neighborhood in 2009 with the help of the Fayetteville Housing Authority and Community Resource Group, a local community development financial institution. The plan is to build 80 homes. One-third will be reserved for families making less than 80% of the median family income for the area. Another third will be reserved for moderate-income families, and the final third will be sold at the market rate to anyone.
we're really hopeful that this can be a case study that can be built upon and be the first project of many, and that we can really scale the Pay It Forward program to be a regional program that is available throughout Northwest Arkansas.
Families making less than 80% of the median family income will be eligible for the Pay It Forward program, which helps them qualify for a reduced mortgage payment. The program was made possible through a partnership with the city of Fayetteville.
The city in 2013 agreed to contribute $1 million. That was done as an infrastructure cost share. And so we have an agreement with the city where we've committed to using all of that $1 million to directly reduce the purchase price for income qualified households that buy a house in Willow Bend. So it reduces the purchase price, reduces the monthly mortgage payment, and allows someone to qualify for a home that they otherwise wouldn't qualify for.
Tiffany Hudson, Executive Director of Partners for Better Housing, says the partnership will allow them to provide qualified buyers with a $35,000 discount on their mortgage.
They are still going to buy the home at the market rate, at the list price that everyone else would buy the homes. But our funding from the city allows us to discount their mortgage. It's really a financial tool that happens in closing, that we discount their mortgage by $35,000, and that will hopefully bring their monthly payment amount, their down payment amount, down to a level at which they can afford to buy the home.
Hudson says there are some other programs that can be combined with the Pay It Forward program to help make homes more affordable. Pay It Forward is a shared equity program. Hudson says that means buyers agree to share some of the profit once they're ready to sell their house.
So regardless of whether they want to sell in 5 years or 10 or 15, at the point at which they sell their home, then they will recoup their original funds that they put into it, their down payment, all of the equity that they've been paying into it on a monthly basis. And then we will cap the amount of profit they can make at 2% per year.
The average increase in homes in Northwest Arkansas is between 4 and 6%. Even with the cap, Hudson says it should set people up with a substantial nest egg so they can go out and buy their next home.
But it also allows Partners for Better Housing to purchase that home back at a price that remains affordable. So we are trying to balance two goals. We're trying to help lower income families build wealth by becoming homeowners, but we're also trying to maintain long-term affordability in the community so that future families that want to buy into Willow Bend can also afford those homes, that it doesn't immediately become unaffordable and unattainable after that first generation moves in.
In 2019, Enterprise Community Partners produced a report on affordable housing in Northwest Arkansas. According to the study, which was supported by the Walton Family Foundation, housing is becoming increasingly inaccessible to the region's workers, families, and seniors. Household income growth has fallen behind rising rent and for sale home prices in three of the region's four largest cities. The report's authors say the four most urgent housing challenges facing Northwest Arkansas over the next decade are a lack of regional housing policy, the need for diverse housing options, limited choices for low-income households, and weak links between housing and transportation options. Keaton Smith, board chairman for Partners for Better Housing, says they hope to address some of those issues through the Willow Bend neighborhood.
We're hoping that as we get real houses on the ground and have real families that are impacted by the project, that we can scale the work. And we know that to scale the work, it's going to take staff resources to do that. And that's what needs to be done to get out in front of what is really a looming crisis for the Northwest Arkansas region and act at the scale necessary to address the scale of the problem before we run into issues that Austin and Denver and San Francisco and other communities are facing.
More information is available at partnersforbetterhousing.org. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
There were a lot of firsts in Northwest Arkansas following the November general election as voters cast their ballots for a diverse group of local candidates. And as Ozarks at Large's Zuzana Sitek reports, that trend continued into the handful of runoff elections held 2 weeks ago.
What made me run is my mother.
That's Gayatri Agnew. Next month, she'll become Bentonville's first Indian American member of the city council.
So my mom raised me in a way where when you look at the community around you and you see if there's anything helpful that you can do, and the answer is you can, then you do it.
Which is why in 2018, Agnew ran for State House District 93 against Jim Dodson. And while she lost, she says she started building a community that propelled her to win in the city council runoff election against Jeff Matkins 2 weeks ago.
In Benton County generally, and certainly in Bentonville, there just haven't been a lot of choices when it comes to campaigns and elections. There haven't been a lot of options. There hasn't been a lot of diversity of thought and ideology. And so there's just a lot of energy.
Agnew says she also lives in a community that's undergoing rapid change and growth, and she wants to have a stake in deciding the direction the city is heading.
There's something incredibly powerful and exciting about hyper-local governance.
Overall, Agnew believes Bentonville's government, from the mayor to its various department heads, operates well. But it was important for her to be in the room as the city makes decisions based on the results of the 2020 census and considers zoning to accommodate the rapid growth.
And I do think there's more that the city of Bentonville can and should do around transparency and around inclusion. I think we're on the right track, but there's just more we can do, and I want to help push our city leadership in that direction.
According to the latest report from the Northwest Arkansas Council on the growing diversity in the region, from 2010 to 2019, Bentonville's overall population grew by nearly 42%. And in the next 3 years, the city is expected to grow an additional 15%.
You know, for me, when I look at Bentonville, I see nothing but potential and opportunity. And I've said many times in the campaign that I love this community very much, and it's given me and my family incredible opportunity. But I also see change and transformation, and I feel a great deal of ownership and responsibility to ensure that that change and transformation occurs in a way that protects the small town charm of Bentonville and also creates a community where everyone feels welcome no matter where they've come from.
Which Agnew says is especially important as the city becomes increasingly diverse. In 2019, Bentonville's diverse population stood at nearly 28%, an increase of 4% since 2010. The Asian population in particular has seen significant growth, from 8% a decade ago to 12% now. And the Asian Indian population specifically has grown by nearly 240% from 2011 to 2018.
For me personally, I think representation, so sort of stepping back just from diversity, just representation, right? Seeing government bodies made up of a reflection of the communities that they serve on all lines, right? Socioeconomic, educational attainment, gender, ethnicity, race. It's really important. And diverse government bodies make better decisions because they have unique perspectives that are brought from people who have different backgrounds.
Agnew says she applauds the creation of the Bentonville Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion Community Task Force in the wake of protests over the killing of George Floyd, but says that's merely the beginning.
So the creation of the task force is step one, not therefore we're done. But I think it also shows a commitment by a really broad and diverse set of citizens to engage actively, to participate, to be part of the solution.
We also asked Agnew about housing, as population growth in both Benton and Washington counties drives up home sales and prices to record levels. According to a Skyline report released in March, in the last half of 2019, homes in Benton County sold at an average of nearly $265,000, a 30% increase from 2014. And while the vacancy rate in the multifamily market is rising, so is average monthly rent, which currently stands at about $715. But rates are going up about 5% each year. The report concludes housing will become increasingly less affordable if the area's population continues growing at the present rate. As someone who grew up in low-income housing in California, Agnew says she has a personal connection to this issue.
I'm a product of a public-private partnership to create affordable housing in a place that would have otherwise been unaffordable for my family and I to live. And my mother is a teacher. So when I talk about wanting to make sure that we have affordable housing and accessible housing in Bentonville, and that teachers and law enforcement and social workers can afford to live here in Bentonville, it's very personal because that was my story of having been raised by a teacher who was able to access affordable housing in our community.
Agnew says housing affordability in Bentonville should have been getting more attention before the COVID-19 pandemic, but the current health crisis is bringing that struggle into even greater focus. As Agnew takes her seat on the city council in Bentonville next month, DeAndre Jones will be doing the same thing in Fayetteville. While Jones is not the first African-American on the Fayetteville City Council, he says there hasn't been a Black person in that government position for nearly two decades.
African-Americans throughout the state and country, we are looking for hope. We're looking for opportunity. And so I do believe that my election is about hope, inspiration, and I will say opportunity.
Jones is a local social worker and community advocate who has served as president of the Northwest Arkansas Democratic Black Caucus, chair of the Civil Rights Commission, chair of Mayor Lionel Jordan's African American Advisory Council, and secretary of the Civil Service Commission.
Representation matters, and there's a lot that I want to say about it, but I think to narrow it down would be the need for creating a more equitable form of government. And as an activist, I got a chance to address a lot of those concerns and those issues, but now it's time to look at it from a policy lens.
And Jones says he wants equity reflected in all aspects of city business.
And so we have to take a deeper look and say, okay, we've got these great programs. We've got the heart for these great programs. But what are barriers? What communities are impacted? Because I do believe this, when we reach from the bottom, our entire community rises.
From its climate policy to the city council's recent approval of a resolution that declares racism a public health emergency, Fayetteville bills itself as the most progressive city in the region. But some have criticized city leadership for not living up to that title. Jones says he believes in Fayetteville's foundation of compassion.
And if compassion is who we are, then we cannot be a compassionate community or city without being equitable. And so I do think that it's a marathon. It's definitely not a sprint, but I do believe in celebrating small victories. I do believe in bragging about who we are and what we have accomplished, but I do think that it's time that we do even more.
Policing in the city has also become a topic of discussion over the course of the last few years, but especially after the killing of George Floyd. Some have called on the city to reconsider the construction of a new police station that voters elected to fund during a bond election held last year. As an activist, Jones has regularly engaged with the Fayetteville Police Department and says the health and safety of the community have always been a major component of his platform.
In order for us to have a conversation in Fayetteville around racial justice, the police department has to be present. And I think that communication is the key. I think that's the first key. That's fundamental.
Jones also believes in relationship building as a tool of change.
If the police department has the necessary training and tools and the relationship with the African-American community, plus that's any marginalized community, I believe that we'll see less challenges with the police department. So that, and I've been very successful, well, somewhat successful as relates to building bridges. So I plan to continue to build bridges and working with the police department and the citizens.
And he adds he plans to approach all city council discussions by making sure everyone has the opportunity to be heard.
I am committed to learning. I'm committed to growing, and I'm committed to serving and having a heart to lead from a place of empathy, a place of compassion, a place of support. And that's what I'm going to do. And that will be based on any decision that I make, whether it's a budget issue, or whether it's the police, or whether it's housing.
Jones and Gayatri Agnew are both among a diverse class of candidates elected to local offices in Northwest Arkansas this cycle. And while many boundaries are left to be broken on the state level, they say the momentum is there.
I think it's paying off as it relates to making sure that representation matters and that individuals understand that Northwest Arkansas is changing, and with change, there has to, leadership and representation has to reflect that. And I do believe that this is symbolic of opening minds and opening hearts to change and to electing individuals who don't necessarily look like the status quo or who has been elected historically.
It's not surprising to me that we saw boundaries and barriers being broken at a localized level in Springdale, Rogers, Fayetteville, Bentonville. Local office is where typically those kinds of things can happen for the first time because it's where you have a closer relationship directly to citizens.
In Washington County, voters elected Evelyn Rios Stafford to Justice of the Peace, making her the first transgender person to ever hold office in Arkansas. Kenny Arredondo Loyola, the first openly gay Latino, was also elected Justice of the Peace in Washington County. In Springdale, Kevin Flores will be the first person of color on that city council. And in Rogers, April Legere won her city council race and will be the first African-American woman to serve in that position. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Susanna Sitek.
Crystal Bridges Museum of American Art is formally announcing the construction plans for the Whole Health Institute on the museum's grounds. The nonprofit 75,000 square foot facility will be built on the northwest side of the museum's additional parking lot. The Whole Health Institute will have a space for a gathering of up to 800 people, the Chopra Library, and spaces for interactive programs. It will be designed by Marlon Blackwell Architects, and ground is scheduled to be broken next spring, with the project completed in 2023. The announcement of the Whole Health Institute as an entity was made by Alice Walton during the winter meeting of the Northwest Arkansas Council in Bentonville in January. Construction on parts of Arkansas Highway 112 will be discussed virtually tonight and Thursday night at 5:30 each evening. The Arkansas Department of Transportation will host live question and answer sessions about widening projects from 2 to 4 lanes along Highway 112 in Washington and Benton counties. The widening, estimated to cost nearly $88 million, will be along the highway between Taneytown and Bentonville. Routes for the 3 separate projects have yet to be narrowed down to a final path. Residents will also be able to provide feedback on the projects until 4:30 the afternoon of January 1st. Links for the virtual meetings and more information can be found at ArkansasHighways.com. This week on the TED Radio Hour on KUAF, ecologist Daniel Stryker studies how bats spread disease. He says the way people are bitten by bats is often as horrible as it sounds. Bats entering houses in the night and biting people. The scientific side stories and not-so-obvious ideas that helped us better understand 2020 on this week's TED Radio Hour, beginning at 1 Sunday afternoon on 91.3 KUAF.
Theater Squared presents the world premiere of the T2 adaptation of A Christmas Carol. This adaptation reimagines Dickens' classic ghost story and sets the stage for a new Northwest Arkansas tradition. On stage through December 27th, 777-7477 or theater2.org for tickets and information. KUAF is supported by The Momentary, presenting Nick Cave, Until. This exhibition is the artist's largest project yet, including thousands of wind spinners, a crystal cloud, and more. Open until January 3rd. More information available at themomentary.org.
This is Ozarks at Large. The process of vaccinating Arkansans for the coronavirus is finally underway. Yesterday, the state received its first shipment of a vaccine from Pfizer. Within hours, frontline workers like Megan DeLong, who works as an epidemiologist with the Department of Health, were rolling up their sleeves to get a shot.
We actually go into healthcare facilities that have outbreaks, so that's what my team does. So that's why we were part of the people that were selected. So it was very exciting to be one of the first.
Also getting the vaccine was Arkansas Surgeon General Dr. Greg Bledsoe, who said he felt the need to lead by example.
This has been a terrible ordeal, not just in the United States, but around the world. And to be here on this day and to see the fruition of all the labor of so many healthcare workers, so many scientists and researchers, I mean, it's an amazing thing to think about where we've been And where we are now, it's just really encouraging. It makes me really proud.
Priority in distributing the vaccine is going to healthcare workers who treat those with the virus and the staff and residents of long-term care facilities. They are considered most at risk. It likely will not be until next summer before the vaccine is available for everyone. In the meantime, officials say it's important for people to continue basic precautions like wearing masks, staying socially distant, and washing hands frequently. Arkansas's battle with COVID-19 is one of the subjects covered in the most recent conversation between John Brummett, political writer for the Arkansas Democrat Gazette, and Roby Brock, with our partner Talk Business and Politics. Roby asked John Brummett about the primetime television address given late last week by Governor Asa Hutchinson regarding Arkansas and the virus. John Brummett says the governor tried to deliver a message that straddled two messages.
I believe the purpose of his address was to try to take this needle on live statewide TV and try to thread it. And he wanted to thread it this way. I want to kind of alarm you all, but not real bad, that this thing is scary. But I want to encourage you while I alarm you. I want to tell you, you're doing good. I see most of you wearing masks. And if you keep doing good, and boy, our hospitals are working hard, we'll get through it. And he said, he appropriated the Lord. He said, Jesus says it's okay to celebrate with more restraint Christmas this year. He actually said that. So he's trying to thread that needle without actually doing anything, because he knows that the folks to his right, who dominate his modern party, will not tolerate any further government restriction. He also, I think, has some honest belief that if at all possible, we've got to try to keep businesses open and keep the economy going for the public good as a consideration along with public health. I think that. But, I mean, I think he's just trying to say, listen to me, folks. Do better. You're doing great. Let's not get too scared. Let's just get determined. I'm going to talk to you try to be a fellow conservative and thread this needle. And by the way, I'm going to have the legislature, and we'll try to get them to come in and have a committee of the whole and become an open partner in these executive powers by approving them, which is, I believe he told you in an interview, that's kind of an esoteric thing that's not much news. I agree with him on that. It's an esoteric thing that's not much news. But it was the closest thing to news in that speech. I give him a B-minus grading on the modern curve.
John Brummett is a political writer for the Arkansas Democrat Gazette. That was John Brummett talking this week with Roby Brock from our partner, Talk Business and Politics. More from their conversation, including discussion about yesterday's Electoral College vote in Arkansas and around the country, at talkbusiness.net.
KUAF and your community says thank you for making a gift during last week's Season of Giving on-air fundraiser here on 91.3. With your help, along with thousands of other listeners, we were able to reach our goal of raising $50,000, funding that goes directly back into the programs that you tune in for each and every day. If you did not have the chance to make your end-of-year gift to KUAF, remember that you can make a donation at any time, online, at supportkuaf.com. Thank you from KUAF Public Radio, and happy holidays.
This is Ozarks at Large. This weekend, the University of Arkansas Fort Smith held commencement ceremonies virtually. Chancellor Teresa Riley and deans offered their congratulations, as did Fort Smith Mayor George McGill. And the commencement address was delivered by John Jetter, the conductor and music director of the Fort Smith Symphony. Sitting at a piano, he did more than just the commencement speech.
Hello to the 2020 graduating class of the University of Arkansas, Fort Smith.
...469 students signed up for the virtual fall commencement, and Friday afternoon we reached one of them by Zoom, Rafa Yassin. Rafa leaves UAFS with a major in media communications and a minor in Spanish. When her college career began, things were pretty normal. In-person classes, no social distancing required, but the last couple of semesters were anything but the usual.
It was pretty difficult, not gonna lie. You know, whenever you're so used to doing something a certain way and then having to change everything all of a sudden, it was very hard. And a lot has changed within my courses. I feel like when we don't actually get to go to class, like we don't actually have in-class classes, I feel like it takes away from that motivation to actually want to do any work. It takes away from the, you know, like, why am I doing this? You know, you just sit and you're thinking like how is this doing anything? How am I learning? It's more of like me teaching myself kind of situation rather than being in a classroom setting whenever you can actually listen to your professor lecturing. And so it was pretty tough, I'm not gonna lie, but I did push through it, and I know that everybody else has been pushing through it as well. So yeah, I mean, I think it was difficult, but manageable.
Rafa began at UAFS as a political science major, then turned her attention to writing, and finally settled on media communications. She says despite the changes, she always had an eye toward a common goal for her post-studies life.
Initially, my goal was to become like an immigration lawyer. My plan was to always help people. Like, my plan was always to change the world, because honestly, we kind of live in a corrupt world nowadays. So I just felt like I couldn't do that by being an immigration lawyer. And then writing, I was like, no, that's not exactly what I want to do either. And then I found out that we had a media communication degree.
There is another goal for her: to help eradicate the persistent stereotypes about Islam and Muslims.
You know, we're portrayed by the media as being terrorists, as being people that just want hatred towards everybody, when that's not really the case. I mean, I know there are a few rare extremists, I mean, a few extremists, but that does not, the small few doesn't, you know, shouldn't portray the big, large community that we are. And so my goal is to always try to shed light on what we really are. And by doing that, I really wanted to try and go into the media field and maybe like become one of the first hijabi news reporters, or maybe make a movie someday about, like, you know, the correct portrayal of what Muslims are, you know, not some freaking story about how a Muslim woman falls in love with a white man and then she ends up taking off her hijab. And, you know, I just want to change the way the world views my culture and my religion. That's my goal, really.
Rafa was born in Syria, but came to Fort Smith before her first birthday, and she's lived in the city ever since. She says her goal to help defeat stereotypes is influenced in part by unfortunate episodes involving a lack of acceptance of who she is.
Just because I have something on my head, I feel like it shouldn't make me different than anybody else that has been raised here their entire lives. And unfortunately, I have been victim to some hatred from a lot of people here. And yeah, it does play a little bit of a role into why I want to go into what I want to do.
And she's already started work toward better understanding of her religion and culture with a series of entries on the streaming social media app TikTok. The quick snippets, she says, began as a hobby.
And then it turned out a lot of people liked watching my content. And so it was really nice to get out there, you know, put Muslims on the radar, I guess, like show them that we're not just what the media portrays. So it was really nice sharing kind of that side of me, you know, but that was more like a personal type thing. I don't know where that's going to go, to be honest with you. I'm still kind of trying to grow my platform.
Rafa Yassin says she wants to stay in Arkansas, perhaps move to Northwest Arkansas for a job, and would like to eventually be a news anchor. She graduated Saturday from the University of Arkansas Fort Smith with a degree in media communications and a minor in Spanish. We talked with her Friday via Zoom. Tomorrow, we'll meet another recent UAFS grad who's realizing her lifelong dream to teach.
The Scott Family Amazium in Bentonville offers curious and creative holiday family fun through interactive experiences. The Amazium has enhanced health and safety protocols and plenty of space for physical distancing. More information and ticket reservations are available at amazium.org. KUAF is supported by Arcom Plus, serving Northwest Arkansas for over 30 years. Arcom Plus offering printing, binding, graphic design, promotional items, and more. Printingnwa.com or 444-7711 for more. Ozarks at Large is underwritten, in part, by the Walton Family Charitable Support Foundation.
This is Ozarks at Large. Ketamine, a widely used FDA-approved surgical anesthetic, is increasingly being used off-label to help people suffering with treatment-resistant depression and other psychological conditions. A growing number of IV ketamine medical clinics are opening around the state, including several in Northwest Arkansas. Ozarks at Large's Jacqueline Froelich introduces us to a Fayetteville physician who pioneered the therapy, as well as a patient who says the treatment saved her life.
50-year-old professional writer Sarah James, not her real name to protect her identity, lives in Northwest Arkansas.
I was diagnosed bipolar in 2001. I was 31 years old.
James says her traumatic childhood gave rise to certain psychological symptoms as she matured.
Like an extreme waves of depression and darkness and suicidality combined with, like, for me, agitation.
After years of trying conventional psychiatric meds, which failed to help, James says she got a referral in 2017 from her therapist to see psychiatrist Kathleen Wong, MD. Dr. Wong had recently opened a ketamine IV infusion therapy clinic specifically to treat refractory or treatment-resistant depression. Wong says she bases her ketamine infusion therapy on protocols recently developed by the National Institute of Mental Health.
Where they looked at people with refractory depression, that means depression that they've had for years, they've tried a bunch of medications, they've had therapy, they've had hospitalizations, maybe even ECT, and they've still not gotten better. So they took the studies involved patients like that. They were offered a single ketamine infusion, and in a mind-blowing sense, 70% of those people saw benefits within hours to days.
Wong added ketamine to her conventional adult psychiatric practice almost 4 years ago. Patients seeking the treatment are informed of the drug's effects and screened.
Make sure they understand the process, tell them a little bit about how the ketamine works, and then we weigh them because it's a weight-based dosing, and my nurse, who is very adept at finding IV access, will start an IV on them, and they sit quietly in a room in a recliner with ambient spa playlist on headphones and maybe even a sleep mask for about 40 minutes. And they never go out. They never asleep. So if they're cold, they can ask for a blanket or something. And then that's it. You know, we at the end, 40 minutes, we hand them a drink of water, and they may be a little bit woozy at first, but they'll walk out on their own power after a few minutes and with their head a little more cleared. It's actually very straightforward and simple.
Benefits, Wong says, may include relief from self-destructive thoughts, as well as improved mood, sleep, social engagement, and appetite. Typically, Wong prescribes a 6-low-dose infusion regime, which can occur over several weeks or months, depending upon the patient's schedule.
What has been exciting and promising is work out of Europe, where they saw it being very powerful in helping people with alcohol misuse disorders. So people with alcohol issues responded to just very few treatments and did well. There's some fascinating research about working with borderline personality disorders and some promising thoughts about working with autistic spectrum disorders. Again, that's a little more tentative, but just all very encouraging.
Ketamine has long had FDA approval, but only for use as an inexpensive anesthetic. And because ketamine's patent expired in 2002, expensive clinical trials on the drug won't yield much financial return on pharmaceutical investment. That's why Janssen Pharmaceuticals, a subsidiary of Johnson & Johnson, developed a ketamine isolate, esketamine, to treat refractory depression under the brand name Spravato. It was the first new antidepressant drug to come on the market in decades.
One of my favorite stories was someone who we treated early on, and this person, it wasn't my patient, so it was a referral from somebody else, and I started treating them, and two treatments in on their series, I had an exuberant phone call from the patient's therapist. Kathleen, oh my goodness, what is this? This is amazing. This person's doing something. It's moving forward in therapy.
Drug therapies often used in conjunction with talk therapy or cognitive behavioral therapy to better process past trauma and emotional distress. According to drugs.com, the esketamine brand drug Spravato costs around $700 per two-dose nasal spray, ranging between $4,700 to $6,800 for the first month of treatment. According to the Institute for Clinical and Economic Review, as an FDA-approved drug, Spravato may be covered by medical insurance, but unlike ketamine, it works best only in combination with an oral antidepressant. Ketamine infusion for depression typically costs from $400 to $800 per treatment, depending on the clinic. But because ketamine therapy is viewed as experimental, insurance companies do not provide reimbursements for treatment, Wong says, who holds up a hand to demonstrate the science of how it works.
My hand is a neuron, a nerve cell. My fingers are the dendrites, and the fingertips are the synapses as how the nerve cells communicate to each other. And I say these are in networks and circuits all over our brain. And unfortunately, a person who's dealing with chronic mental illness, chronic life stress, or chronic substance dependence, these cells actually die off and those connections break down, especially in the regions of the prefrontal cortex and up in the hippocampus. And this is thought to be the fault of glutamate as a neurotransmitter. And what's happening is that glutamate is sitting on the NMDA receptor and activating it very ferociously and causing these cells to break down, die off, and those circuits to break apart. Ketamine stands in front of that NMDA receptor, and the glutamate has to go to the NMAMPA receptor, which activates a lot of things as well, the last step of which is activating BDNF, or brain-derived neurotrophic growth factor. And this promotes both neurogenesis, new brain cells, and synaptogenesis, new connections. These effects can be seen in a brain within 110 minutes of the first infusion. That structural change already happens. And so I imagine that first infusion is so remarkable, and the series of six can set that person in a whole new place from a structural standpoint.
The outpatient ketamine infusion procedure performed at Wong's clinic can come with certain side effects.
The side effects that we typically see might be a transient or short-lived increase in blood pressure. Sometimes there might be some nausea, but we try to offset that with some precautions or some other measures that can soften that for people. It really is overall very well tolerated.
As for Sarah James, she sought treatment from Dr. Wong as a last resort.
I was really in a dangerous place. I was starting to make plans to burn all my possessions so people wouldn't read my old journals and be upset by my dark thoughts. And I was sort of ramping up to possibly attempting suicide.
James tries to describe the treatment experience.
Yeah, I just did a treatment with Dr. Wong just a few days ago, actually. It's an amazing experience. It's sort of like a hallucinogenic high, and it has the quality also of like this feeling of sweeping, like uplift.
During ketamine infusion treatments, patients may see bright colors and patterns or experience temporary euphoric or out-of-body sensations, which quickly dissipate post-infusion. When James returned home after her very first treatment, she says she was able to participate in a family gathering. Typically, she lived in seclusion. She recommends ketamine infusion therapy to anyone who is dangerously depressed.
I was getting to the point where I wasn't invested in being alive anymore. My brain wasn't going to work for me. And I was seeming weird to everybody, you know? But the organ of my brain was failing the way a heart fails, you know? And so had I not had this treatment, I really do think I'd be dead. I really do.
Yale Medicine reports that unlike traditional antidepressants, ketamine may enable impaired brain cortex connections in patients to regrow, which can result in more positive thoughts and behaviors. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Jacqueline Froelich.
Over the past few weeks and months, we have spent plenty of time talking about vaccinations, about elections, about the economic fallout from one or the other or both. And we thought we'd spend just a few minutes right now talking about food. Our holiday celebrations in 2020 aren't the same as they have been in the past, but food is still a big part of our holiday celebrations. And we're reaching out to some chefs to get some suggestions about creating festive meals. Ozarks at Large's Daniel Carruth produced this holiday recipe suggestion for us.
name is Abby Milam. I own the Veggie Table in Bella Vista, Arkansas. We're going to do some Christmas recipes today, and one of my favorites always was my mother's cheese roll. So what you want to do is have 1.5 pounds of natural cheddar cheese, and you want to soften that to room temperature. At the very top of the recipe, I'm looking at my mother's old recipe. I think this is probably from 1972. It says, don't forget the olives, in big letters, underlined. So you want to have some chopped up olives. I like green olives. You can do black olives. You can do a mixture of green and black. But you want to get your cheddar cheese to room temperature. And then you want to do one large and one small package of cream cheese. So that also needs to be at room temperature. And then you're gonna get 6 small cloves of garlic, and you're gonna finely chop those or garlic press, which is a lot easier. Anyway, you wanna just combine all of the ingredients. So you wanna do the natural cheddar, the cream cheese, the garlic, the olives, and then if you want to, you can put some finely chopped pecans in there. And then you wanna just combine that and then separate it into 3 different rolls, I guess you can say. At this point, it's good if you put it on some wax paper and chill it, and then leave it in the refrigerator for, you know, maybe an hour or so, and then take it out, and then you can roll it in pecans. So I like to toast my pecans first, because that, you know, just gives it a little extra flavor, a little added depth, and then you just roll it in there, and, you know, put it on a plate, put a bunch of crackers around, and you can do some jams or jellies or anything to go with it, and it's just lovely. Everybody loves a cheese roll. So that's my recipe for the holidays.
Abby Milam, the owner of the Veggie Table in Bella Vista. That piece produced for us by Ozarks at Large's Daniel Carruth. Happy holidays. Of course, 2020 has provided hardships for many when it comes to eating. We heard on yesterday's Ozarks at Large that more Arkansas families are facing food insecurity now than before the start of the pandemic. The economic shifts because of the virus continue to create hardships, and those who make their living through music are among the most seriously affected. For months, the Fayetteville Roots Festival has teamed up with partners to provide meals for musicians, sound professionals, bartenders, and others. Last week, Brightwater, a center for the study of food, drove a truck from Bentonville to Roots HQ on the Fayetteville Square to lend a hand and provide meals. We caught up with Chef Adam Simmons last Thursday.
It's a partnership between Brightwater and the Roots Festival headquarters. We're feeding musicians during COVID.
What's the operation? You have the NWAC Brightwater truck behind you?
Yes, sir. I'm teaching a class called Capstone, which is a senior level class where we break into teams and create concepts through business model all the way to conception.
So what's happening? You have a team here. Tell me what everyone's doing and how it's working.
I have 3 teams here. Team one did theirs a week before Thanksgiving. Team two is today. Team three is next Thursday. When their team is not doing their concept, they're just helping everyone else. So
what's the operation like today?
It's been busy. Everyone needs to be fed these days. And everyone's kind of struggling, so we're here just to help.
What's on the menu?
We have a brisket sandwich. They made the baguettes that it's going on with a chimichurri sauce and some pickled onion. And then we have a cauliflower. It's kind of a peppery cauliflower sandwich with chimichurri sauce also on a baguette.
And so food prepared at Brightwater and brought here?
Food prepared at Brightwater and on the truck. It's kind of a blend. We did as much as we could at Brightwater last night, loaded the truck, brought it down today, and finished everything off.
So what time did you arrive here, and what is that like when you get here and you start preparing what you have to do here?
10:30, we arrive. I get the truck set up for the students, and I walk away. I don't do anything else. The students, from start to finish, do all the work.
You know, some of us, when we think about a culinary education, these are the things we don't think about. We just think about, you know, the long knives and the chopping and the sous chef and whatever. This is part of the experience, though.
Yeah, they'll walk away from this program with a business plan that can go to a bank for funding. We want them to be ready to go as soon as they graduate.
And it's got to be a satisfying feeling. Not only is education taking place, but as you mentioned, you're helping folks.
Absolutely. Roots is all about music and the culinary scene in Northwest Arkansas, and we're here. You know, we're part of that, so we're here to help.
Who drives the truck?
Not me. It's one of the person that takes care of our storeroom drives the truck.
Good. I'm glad to hear that. Yeah. What else should we know about Brightwater, about this operation, or anything?
Brightwater is a world-class culinary school, just happens to be located in a small town in northwest Arkansas. We will have a presence down here in Fayetteville when the new kitchen at the library opens up. We have a culinary class at the Fayetteville High School already started, so you'll see a lot more of us down here.
One last question for a chef. Is there any, this has been such a hard, long, challenging year. Do you have a personal comfort food that helps you out through tough times?
Gumbo is what I like to make to calm the nerves and to feed the soul. So,
Chef, thank you very much.
Absolutely. Thanks.
Thank you.
Chef Adam Simmons from Brightwater, a center for the study of food, as meals were prepared and given to members of the area's musical community last Thursday. The Brightwater truck will be back at the Roots HQ on the Fayetteville Square this Thursday. More information about the meals program can be found at therootsfest.org. More about Brightwater at brightwater.org.
For the Central Arkansas Library System, I'm Mark Chris with an Encyclopedia of Arkansas Minute. Melinda Rose Dillon was born October 13, 1939 in Hope, but found fame in Hollywood. After studying acting with Lee Strasberg and at Chicago's Goodman School of Drama, she started a career as an improvisational comedian and stage actress, including time with the Second City Troupe. The talented actor was nominated for a Tony Award for a 1962 Broadway production of Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf, a Golden Globe Award for 1976's Bound for Glory, and an Academy Award for 1977's Close Encounter of the Third Kind and 1981's Absence of Malice. And the Screen Actors Guild recognized her for her performance in Magnolia in 1999. She is probably best known, though, as the mother in 1983's A Christmas Story, where she answers her son's request for a Red Ryder carbine action 200-shot range model air rifle with "No, you'll shoot your eye out." To learn more, visit encyclopediaofarkansas.net.
KUAF's podcast offerings continue to grow. We have new episodes from three of those podcasts that you can listen to right now. Reflections, a podcast about how music can be a source of healing and change, made its debut earlier this fall. It's hosted by a pair of familiar voices to regular Ozarks at Large listeners, Antoinette Grajeda and Leah Uribe. You can hear the first episode right now by going to KUAF.com. The second episode of The New Classroom, produced and hosted by Ozarks at Large's Zuzana Sitek, is also now available. It features reporting from Ozarks at Large team members about how education has changed and continues to change as the pandemic continues. And the second episode of The Movement That Never Was, A People's Guide to Anti-Racism in the South and Arkansas, is ready for you as well. And late last month, I hosted a virtual panel discussion with that podcast's executive producer, Paul Kiefer, and other guests. That session, co-hosted by the Fayetteville Public Library, was recorded, and you can watch it right now at faylib.org. You can download any of the KUAF podcasts by going to kuaf.com. This is 91.3 KUAF, Fayetteville, Fort Smith, Bentonville, and Prairie Creek. Contributors for this Tuesday edition of Ozarks at Large included Antoinette Grajeda, Zuzana Sitek, Jacqueline Froelich, and Daniel Carruth. Daniel produced the holiday recipe segment for today's show. Our conversations between John Brumma with the Arkansas Democrat Gazette and Roby Brock with Talk Business and Politics come to us through our partnership with Talk Business and Politics. You can find out more at talkbusiness.net. Additional content for today's show provided by our friends at KUAR Public Radio in Little Rock and Central Arkansas. Our theme is titled First Hurrah. It is written and performed by Daryl Sean. Daryl has a couple of collections of acoustic holiday music that you can find wherever you look for music online. And thanks to Mark Crist for his continued work with the Encyclopedia of Arkansas Minutes. We'll be back with you tomorrow, noon and 7, for a brand new edition of Ozarks at Large for your Wednesday. From the Anthony and Susan Hoy News Studio at the Carver Center for Public Radio, I'm Kyle Kellums. Please take care of yourself. Get rest when you can.